You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Age of Napoleon podcast, episode 2.5, The Advances of Dr. Struensee. Thanks for joining me. I'm releasing this half episode because I have a little show business to talk about, and I also wanted to tell you guys about one of my favorite incidents from the Enlightenment era that I couldn't find a good way to fit into the next full episode. So, I'll start with the boring stuff, but stay tuned, it'll be over soon, and this story has illicit sex and a beheading in it. We're doing a fundraiser. I was hoping to put this off as long as possible, but at this rate, I'll be out of free web hosting in 2 episodes. I don't want to switch to a subscription model or sell bonus content. I'm doing this because I want to share these stories as widely as I can, so charging for them feels like it defeats the purpose. I'm asking you guys to voluntarily contribute what you can. It doesn't have to be much. If everyone listening went without one cup of coffee or pint of beer a month and chipped in with a few dollars for the podcast instead, I would have more than enough resources to keep the project going and continue to expand and improve it. So, to get things jump-started, here's my proposal. In about 5 episodes, we'll reach the French Revolution. Everyone who signs up for a recurring monthly donation of $2 or more between now and then will get to pick the topic of the next episode. Contributors can submit suggestions on anything related to 18th century European history, and then we'll have a vote. Down the road, more contributions will hopefully translate into more episodes released more frequently, and I'm looking at some other potential perks for contributors. So in closing, I just want to say that I'm hoping this will be a two-way street. I've already been really encouraged by the response to this project, and enjoyed interacting with some of you on Twitter and Facebook. Your encouragement, suggestions, and feedback have already been a huge help. If you've enjoyed the show so far, I want to invite you to get involved however you can, not just with your money. The website for donations is patreon.com/ageofnapoleon. patreon.com/ageofnapoleon. And if you haven't already, check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/ageofnapoleon or on Twitter at ageofnapoleon. And thanks to Ryan Serafini for being the first to rate and review the show on iTunes. On top of being a nice comment, I'm told the more reviews and ratings help the show reach a bigger audience. So thank you, Ryan. All right, I think that's enough podcast talk for now. You were promised a story with sex and violence, so let's get to it. Today, Denmark is commonly thought of as one of the most liberal countries on Earth. It wasn't always so. For most of the 18th century, Denmark had a reputation as a conservative, traditional place, a rigidly hierarchical society dominated by stern Lutheran morality, a society that in many ways hadn't changed very much since the Middle Ages. Every country has changed quite a bit over centuries of history, but Denmark's transformation from conservative bastion to progressive icon looks particularly drastic. What makes the change really remarkable is much of it took place over the course of a single 2-year period, at the instigation of one man, Dr. Johann Struensee. Struensee wasn't even Danish. He was born in Saxony in southeastern Germany in 1737. He came from a relatively humble middle-class background, but his family was wealthy enough to send him to university, where he studied medicine. Young Struensee picked up a lot more than just anatomy in school. This was the 1750s, the peak of the Enlightenment. Struensee eagerly soaked up these new ideas and became an enthusiastic convert. He was drawn to the more radical side of Enlightenment thought. He even became an atheist, to the horror of his father, who was a Lutheran pastor. Struensee graduated in 1757 and set up a medical practice in Altona, a city in northwestern Germany ruled by Denmark. Even after leaving the more permissive environment of the university, Struensee made no secret of his beliefs. He had a brilliant mind, and he loved debating and discussing intellectual topics, even dangerous ones like politics and religion. He quickly made a name for himself as a radical among the local elites and intellectuals. Struensee's ideas were threatening, and he wasn't shy in expressing them. But the funny thing is, far from making enemies, everyone seemed to like him. Liberals and atheists were generally despised in aristocratic circles, but almost everyone who met Struensee seemed willing to make an exception. He was brash, but he was also charming and gracious. Even people who didn't like what Struensee had to say liked having him around, and his considerable skills as a doctor made him useful. Struensee may have been a liberal, but his principles didn't stop him from participating in some shameless social climbing. He liked luxury. He liked the company of rich and powerful people. Within a few years, he had fallen in with a group of formerly powerful Danish noblemen who were living in exile from the royal court in Copenhagen after losing out in some palace intrigue. They saw an opportunity in this brilliant, ambitious young man. If they could place him in court, perhaps he could pave the way for their return from exile. Monarchs were increasing their political power during this period, but we shouldn't forget this was an hereditary position. There were no guarantees the king or queen would have the ability or interest to actually participate in government. It was often the case that real power rested with whoever the monarch trusted to handle the business of ruling that he was unwilling or incapable of attending to. This was particularly true of Denmark in the late 18th century because the king was, to use the terminology of the era, mad. Entire books have been written attempting to diagnose King Christian VII's particular disorder. I don't want to try to play amateur psychologist and figure it out myself. Suffice it to say, he had a mental illness and/or cognitive disability that made him mentally and emotionally unstable. The king was obviously incapable of ruling, but Denmark had no legal provision for sidelining an incapacitated monarch, so he remained the legal sovereign, while his ministers and noblemen jockeyed for position around him to rule in his name. During this era, mental illness was often considered to be a symptom of physical disease, so the king was under the constant care of a rotating cast of doctors and quacks. In 1768, Dr. Johann Struensee's powerful friends got him a temporary appointment to administer to the mad king. Amazingly, Struensee's attentions greatly improved King Christian's condition. More importantly, Struensee and the king formed a real personal bond. By all accounts, they were as close to friends as was possible for a king and a commoner during this period. What passed for mental health treatment in the 18th century was pure snake oil by modern standards, so it was probably Struensee's friendship rather than his medical expertise that alleviated the king's mental illness. Struensee's position became permanent, and before long, he was spending more time with the king than anyone else at court. As their bond grew, Christian began to defer to Struensee's advice on matters of state, as well as personal and medical ones. Political power was beginning to shift. Christian's ministers could see what was happening and tried to outmaneuver the wily doctor. Even Christian's wife, Queen Caroline Matilda, disliked this pushy newcomer and tried to limit his influence. But these efforts were hopeless. Christian was completely enthralled. Within a year of their first meeting, Struensee was made a member of Christian's royal cabinet. Like many Enlightenment thinkers, Struensee took a keen interest in education and sought to manage the upbringing of the crown prince according to Enlightenment principles. This brought him into frequent contact with the queen. Evidently, this familiarity softened Caroline Matilda's dislike for Struensee, because by early 1770 they were having an affair. As he betrayed the king, Struensee's political power increased, and Christian's condition worsened. By late 1770, the doctor had pushed out all his rivals and secured total control over the royal government. In December, he gained the power to issue decrees that would have the force of law without the king's signature. With the king too deep in delusion and depression to rule, Struensee was now effectively dictator of Denmark. The doctor wasted no time in transforming the country. By the stroke of Struensee's pen, feudalism had all but vanished from Denmark in the space of a few months. The nobility lost their legal privileges and tax exemptions, peasantry were freed from their feudal obligations and granted lands of their own. Torture, capital punishment, and the African slave trade were outlawed. Struensee ended state censorship, Denmark became the first country to embrace the principle of freedom of speech as we understand it today. He even levied new taxes to institute a rudimentary social welfare system. The bureaucracy, the army, the judiciary, and the universities were all totally reformed and reorganized. During his time in power, Struensee issued an average of 3 new decrees per day. The Danish government soon became the idol of every Enlightenment thinker in Europe, but not everyone was pleased. Such drastic changes inevitably alienated people within the existing power structure. So with the rapid pace of reform, Struensee was effectively making new enemies every day in office. A movement against the doctor was growing. Ironically, the newly free press became a major avenue for dissent. But if Struensee noticed, there's no evidence he cared. After all, what could his enemies do? He served at the pleasure of a king who loved and trusted him, and who was too out of it to be reading anti-government newspapers or taking audiences with disgruntled noblemen. Unfortunately for the doctor, by 1771, his enemies had gotten wind of his affair with the queen. That summer, she gave birth to a daughter. Struensee was almost certainly the father. With the king incapacitated, even people without knowledge of the affair were gossiping about the baby's heritage. Armed with that knowledge and fueled by the swirling rumors, a conspiracy formed at court to overthrow the doctor. On January 17, 1772, they acted. The queen, Struensee, and some of his political allies were arrested. Struensee was found guilty of treason for committing adultery with the queen. On the 28th of April, 1772, the man who had banned capital punishment and torture had his right hand chopped off and then was publicly beheaded before a large crowd. He had ruled Denmark for less than a year and a half. Queen Caroline Matilda was sent into exile and never returned to court. King Christian VII never lost his affection for Struensee, even after learning he'd betrayed their friendship. The successful coup plotters took power and immediately began to roll back Struensee's reforms. However, this turned out to be harder than they'd imagined. None of them had Struensee's work ethic or genius for administration. Soon, the new government was as unpopular as Struensee's, and they found it impossible to totally erase the doctor's legacy. Christian's son, the future Frederick VI, remained devoted to the Enlightenment principles he'd learned under Struensee's influence. As he grew into adulthood and began to assert himself politically, he put a stop to this reactionary turn and reinstituted many of his mentor's policies. And ever since, Denmark has never really looked back. In his 16 months in power, Johann Struensee, a humble Saxon doctor, had changed the country forever. That's all for now. Once again, please contribute to the fundraiser at patreon.com/ageofnapoleon and review the show on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Hello everyone, my name is Wesley Livesay from the History of the Second World War podcast. Join me on a journey through the most destructive conflict in human history, a journey that will take us not just through the famous campaigns and cataclysmic battles, but also to the lesser well-known corners of the war that touched millions all over the world, as we try and answer not just the questions of what and where, but how and why. You can find History of the Second World War on all major podcast platforms or at historyofthesecondworldwar.com.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.